What's up, castaways? Welcome back to another episode of the amazingly titled Survivor Squad podcast. I'm your host, Ben Burnett. Joining me once again from the comfort of the floor of their living room, Dina Serlin and Elon Dubrovsky. How are you two doing today?
Happy to be here. Excited to discuss another awesome Survivor episode.
Thanks for having us, Ben. Very excited. What is this, episode 4 now? We've got 5 people eliminated. I think that means that we're approaching the merge, slowly but surely. So it'll be interesting to try to figure out how we think this is going to play out.
And joining us for the first time, we are adding to our numbers in a opposite type of Survivor situation. We have a new host, Julia Meinwald. Welcome to the Survivor Squad.
Thank you. I'm hoping to make the podcast merge. My fingers are all crossed.
I think your addition is at least some sort of, we're merging in a new way, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay. So Julia, what's your history with Survivor? Have you been watching for a long time? Are you a super fan? What's your, tell us.
I am a relatively new fan. I always wonder when they refer to super fans on the podcast, I'm like, am I a super fan? Like, what are the credentials that you need? But I started watching because of my good friends, Elon and Dina, maybe you know them, who had been trying to get my husband and I into the show for years and years and sat us down to watch Heroes versus Villains once, but we didn't know any of the context and we weren't hooked. But when season 37 came out in 2018, they were like, hey, this is a really good season. You guys should get on board. So we watched that one, then quickly binged all 37 seasons. And I now, like Marianne, who was missing the 6 episodes of the Token Scenes, have watched everything except for the reunion show of the episodes in the 30s.
I don't think you're missing much, Julia. Yeah. So I would not go back.
Yeah, because at first we just skipped them all, and then when we ran out, we got so desperate, we went back and started just watching all the reunions in a row.
Oh my god.
That would be a fun side podcast, just a recap of all the reunions. But I really liked last season's reunion where Jeff was like randomly, oh, if you're wondering who makes the pizza, it's this guy, Stu. It was like so apropos of nothing.
Last year might have had the best reunion, just like keeping it right after the show did make it so much better than having everybody like have watched it already and like seen their it always feels stilted and weird in the audio in the studio.
It definitely felt, I guess, more laid back, but also almost like too laid back. Like they were just like trying to say things in between like pizza bites, which was like slightly awkward. And Jeff had like really random transitions. Like if you're just tuning in now, this is Survivor, and it's like 10 p.m. Like, I don't know. It was kind of hilarious, but also I could see this format getting better.
We also did then forego my favorite thing, which I know they haven't done in a while, which is like Jeff appearing on his like motorcycle or ski boat or whatever.
That's the best. I love that. They need to bring that back every time. It's always my fave.
I feel like Jeff should have just done a little lap and came back from the other side.
That would have been amazing if he like faked them out with like, all right, I'll see you guys in New York. And then he like half walks up. He's like, just Joe, I gotcha, or whatever.
Pops the champagne.
I do like the idea of maybe one season Jeff could be like the final boss, you know, like Erica's just been announced the winner and it's like, but now to see if you're the actual winner, you have to face off against Jeff Probst himself, you know, fire making or something. That could get pretty crazy, but maybe that could be like the final season of the show.
That sounds like a Jeff Probst dream, like just like maybe a nightmare for him.
Do we think he secretly wants to play?
Yeah, I feel it reminds me of like I saw a Kanye West interview once where he was like, or no, it was a video of him performing. And he's like, my greatest regret is I'll never be able to watch myself perform. And then like I could see that being Jeff's thing is like he's in his mind like, look at these little idiots running around. If I was out there, I mean, I think he would definitely get voted out so fast, though, because he's such an obvious threat.
They need to find a cast of people who have never watched Survivor before and don't know who he is and then see how he would do.
I would watch that.
Okay. We'll pitch that.
Let's get into episode 4, which kicks off on Vati Beach right after Jenny has been voted out. Daniel walks in, and the first thing he says is, guys, let's sleep on this. I don't think we really need to get into it right now. I don't think I've seen this before. What did people think about this attempt of like just like pushing away your obvious like getting thrown under the bus?
Poor Daniel is just continuing on having a meltdown from, you know, the times of tribal and back to the beach. Like, clearly he hasn't gotten his act together, which I would have hoped that the boat ride back to camp would have helped. But he's probably mentally drained. He needs to, you know, think it through. But strategy-wise, not the best call, especially since there's a whole rest of the tribe that's pissed and wants to say stuff. So him saying like, guys, let's like put a pin in it, like come back to it tomorrow, like that was never gonna work, right?
And Chanel takes a different approach, which she's like, I'm good, that's cool for you, I will take a different approach. Very skillfully throws him under the bus, and then in her testimonial admits that it was her idea. Extremely blows up Daniel's game. Hi takes Mike aside at this point and calls out Daniel for having no backbone and immediately caving, like we talked about last week when he said that he wouldn't go to rocks. Mike is extremely mad at Daniel and at one point says that the tribe has lost its kumbaya. The kumbaya has left. Holy crap baya is what it's all about right now. I thought holy crap baya should have been the episode title. What do you guys think about that?
That's a missed opportunity.
Thank you. Yeah, exactly. So Mike's super mad. He and Hai decide to work together. Nobody realizes that Chanel also screwed them over. Pretty impressive performance here by Chanel overall.
So I had a question about this first section because Daniel has a confessional and he's saying, in his confessional, Chanel didn't reciprocate my trust. And I was like, is he gaslighting himself? Again, which I know people have said about Tori in previous episodes. Like, it seems pretty clear from watching it that he was throwing her under the bus and not vice versa. And the only thing I could think of was, did he think that she betrayed his trust by risking her vote? Or what did you guys make of that?
I kind of get the vibe that he thought at that tribal council that by saying, you know, I don't want to go to rocks, but do you guys think? I think he was hoping that Chanel would sort of back him up and just sort of say, yeah, okay, guys, let's all just like kind of go with what Daniel's saying. Let's do vote for Jenny, even though we don't want to. Sorry, my, you know, like I think he thought that they'd be like an ally as opposed to her just being like, whoa, I'm not voting. Like, this is not on me. I don't want to be a part of this.
However, just as a reminder, she did do that after him completely thrown her under the bus, being like, hey, I was just following Chanel's orders. Yes, sir.
Right. I feel like he clearly started it.
Yeah. It just felt like he basically couldn't read the dynamic and got just like misread every action by his tribe mates and wound up getting the entire bus run over him.
I think just to address the last time I'm going to harp on poor Daniel is like, I feel like he was experiencing a lot of trauma during that whole tribal. He was just like, you know, trying to kind of flail dead in the water. And he may have not even realized the full damage that he has done. Maybe he completely blacked out on like accusing Chanel and everything. And in his mind, he was just like trying to do what was like best for the tribe and made sense while Chanel is like really mad at him.
I also think like as part of this scene, we really need to give a lot of credit to Hai. Like he's shown himself to be such an amazing player. Like the way that he went to Mike, who's like, Daniel kind of didn't even betray Mike until the end, right? Like he voted with Mike for Lydia in that first vote, only switched to vote out Jenny afterwards because he was afraid to go to rocks, which I think Mike probably would have done the same thing. I don't think Mike wanted to go to rocks for Jenny, but somehow like, even though Hai's the one that like the whole time was like, I'm against you. Now it seems like he went to him. He was as honest with him. It sounds like all Mike wants is someone to just be truthful with him. And Daniel like was totally like mistaken in how he approached the situation. I think he said to Mike, yeah, I lied to you. Like, cause Chanel was my number one. So I feel like he could have sort of just not admitted to so much fault. And yeah, I just think Hai is like clearly one of the, like, I know Ben, you were giving a lot of credit to Chanel, which definitely makes sense. Like she's done a good job of somehow getting away somewhat scot-free from like screwing over those two and losing her vote and all of that. But also I think Hai has just done such an amazing job of making things work out in his favor.
And also I've kind of seen a common thread here between, you know, this tribe and Swathi's tribe, which by the end of this season, I'll probably learn their names, but it'll become irrelevant after the merge. So I feel like it's sort of the people who are very clearly against you, it's almost somehow easier to trust them after the fact if you come together and like talk about it, as opposed to someone who you had this like established trust with and then they kind of turn and stab you in the back. It just hurts more and you're like less willing to work with them going forward, it seems.
Although I would say something that I like about the Vati tribe is it did seem like they seemed pretty egoless. Like, there weren't that many sore losers. Like, I thought Hai and Lydia and Mike, none of them came back with this, like, I feel personally betrayed. They seemed really, like, pragmatic and, like, let's figure out the next thing to do.
I think Mike felt pretty betrayed, though. He was pretty mad at Daniel, and he was yelling at him for betraying him, and Daniel was, like, flailing again.
Yeah, the main thing it seemed like Daniel really screwed up in this moment with Mike is mainly just that he got called out by because of the vote going to a tie. There was conversation at Tribal that basically he gets called out for fraternizing with Hai and Lydia in a way that Mike was unaware of. And then, yeah, exactly. I think Dina mentioned earlier, just took so much blame and here we are. Daniel is you know, basically
persona
enemy number one. Persona non grata. Exactly. Next, we go to the reward challenge, which is I'm calling the Tim Robbins special because the winning tribe gets some big fish. And just like all of the other recent challenges that we've seen, it's basically just Jonathan crushing everyone. Taku rushes out ahead. Ika and Vatu are struggling. Marianne is chanting roast fish from the sideline. Jonathan carries them through. They win, like, before the other teams even can unfasten themselves. Jonathan has basically won them this entire challenge. What do you even say about Jonathan at this point?
I actually had a question here because I know, you know, Jonathan is the Goliath, which we talk about, and we saw him save everyone in the water in the previous challenge. What is it about, like, the physique of Jonathan that made him good at untangling ropes? Like, why was he a superstar at that?
I think he's just, like, a talented, like, athletic person. Like, he's coordinated. Like, he clearly, like, has played sports. Like, it also just seems, like, compared to everyone else. Like, everyone else in this season, we talked about this last week, like, everyone's just a normal person, it seems, for the most part. Maybe some, like, above-average athletes. But Jonathan is just, like, so far ahead that, yeah, not only is he good at whatever strength things, like you say, he's good at dexterity and whatever you need to undo these knots and whatever else they ask him to do, throw bags on top of perches or whatever.
And I also think that he was the one calling the instructions on the order in which people should go kind of back and forward to cross the rope to untangle it. So I think he probably also has those leadership skills where he is like the quarterback or whatever. Is that the term that we use for leaders in sports? I don't know.
Yes, you nailed it.
Okay, great. Yay. That's just tying people together, making them work cohesively as a team while performing like a difficult physical task. So go, Jonathan.
So I guess then I do take a little more seriously Jeff's thing after the challenge of like, tell us about the teamwork that got you through it. Because I guess the tribe really is willing to listen to him in a way that like Ika, I feel like, is not psyched to listen to Roxroy if he was telling them like how to do the ropes.
Oh yeah, good point.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Question, I forgot, was he the one calling in the two challenges ago where they were blindfolded?
Yeah, he was yelling.
Okay, see, and you would think like, oh, he's so athletic, surely he'll do well just like navigating a space blindfolded, maybe? But the fact that they chose him to call, you know, the instructions also tells me like he is really good at just like bringing a team together cohesively and making them perform well. Of course, then he's not as good at, you know, the puzzle part, so that was unfortunate. But
this is only loosely related to team building and teamwork, but he also had maybe my favorite line of the series so far, not of the series, of the season, when after Omar says, you know, if you have any questions about Islam, you can come to me. And then Jonathan chimes in, yeah, if you have any questions about Christianity, you can come to me.
Yeah, that cracked me up too.
And then didn't Lindsay then say, I'm a bad Jew, so don't ask me, or something along those lines?
Yeah, that was a hilarious follow-up. That's a fun tribe.
I love that tribe.
So here's my question about Jonathan, though. He's, like, so clearly the best. Jeff is drooling over him after the challenge. Like, Tori was being like, how do we even have a chance against this person? Like, I was talking with Dina earlier. Like, does Jonathan have any chance to win? Like, how can he not get voted out the first time he doesn't have immunity or soon after the merge? Just seems like everyone looks at him as, like, the golden child of the season.
Yeah, he'll be gone so fast.
Just to make a counterargument, I feel like the rest of the Taku tribe are going to be super loyal to him. Like, if they go into the merge, if they can just pick up two votes, say, and get themselves in a majority, I could see them, like, riding pretty far.
They'll have to be really deft with that, though, because I feel like it's so obvious that whoever you're picking up is going to have a reason to jump over to their tribe. Like, they'll have to either have been burned really hard by someone, but, like, essentially you're signing up to join that tribe knowing that you're the fifth and sixth members. So I feel like that's going to be a real challenge to sort of negotiate.
The other thing with Jonathan is that not only is he an obvious target, but a related thing is that I feel like people are also just, like, really mad at the fact that he's so good at these challenges, almost, like, indignant about it. And they're like, ugh, screw this, like, Goliath dude. It's like, yeah, he's been dominating and, like, no more.
To Ben's point, if Vati doesn't go to tribal council again and Daniel sneaks through, do you think he'd be so desperate that he might join up with them?
It's possible. He seems like somebody who you can sort of just, like, at this point, he feels like the character who's been, like, beaten down so hard that you can essentially just tell him to do what you want and he'll just, like, follow through.
Yeah, Tori also seems like the type of person that would easily, you know, switch sides, try to get, like, whatever's the most advantageous for her without any loyalty. Though, I guess that's why Jonathan's tribe was, like, mad at him when he was, like, saying, we're such a tight four, because isn't that kind of then making other people not want to join up with them if you're clearly going to be at the bottom? Like, there's no cracks in that four. So it's going to be really tough for him. I was kind of thinking about how, like, maybe the best case scenario for him is if he turns into kind of like a Xander from last season, where, like, you know, going into the merge, everyone thought Xander was pretty great, like, maybe not as great as they think Jonathan is. And then somehow Xander ended up becoming someone that wasn't getting any votes all the way through the season, even though he had an idol. There were, like, lots of reasons to be concerned about him. But I think at some point, it seemed from, like, the exit interviews and from people talking about it, that at some point they just realized Xander, like, didn't have a chance to win. So they weren't so worried about him making it through. And then that kind of came through in the finals when he didn't get any votes. So I wonder if it's almost like Jonathan needs to somehow make himself look worse at some point soon, so that, like, people aren't, like, think of him not as someone who has a chance to win. Like, maybe he can, like, cuss somebody out or, like, make a really bad strategic blunder. I don't know. I feel like he needs to almost, like, make himself diminished in order to not be such a big target.
I agree with the attempt to try to make yourself look worse. I'm not sure I agree exactly with the parallel to Xander. I really feel like Xander, yeah, he was, like, a strong athletic guy, but nowhere near Jonathan, first of all. And second of all, I think another thing that played into the Xander situation is just how young he was, and people just didn't take him as seriously, especially over time with him kind of doing these flashy moves, but, like, not actually doing anything with, like, all his advantages. So I take your point, Elon, but
it'll be harder.
But it'll definitely, yeah, be okay. Much more of a challenge.
How about this?
Yeah.
Jonathan comes out, tells everyone he, like, is a millionaire. He's like, I'm rich, everyone. Like, I'm so loaded. Talk about it all the time, about all of his cars and yachts and stuff. So then people will be like, oh, this guy would never win in the end. Why would anyone want to give him the money? I don't know. I'm just brainstorming here. But I guess we should probably move on to further in the
episode.
Then
in the finale, he's like, guys,
I'm broke.
I'm the poorest person in America, famously.
Yeah, I have 5 kids and no money.
Yeah.
All of the kids have a terrible disease.
I think we got this. So Jeff asks Jonathan about Taku, and as Elon alluded to earlier, Jonathan's like, yep, we have a hardcore alliance. We work together perfectly. We're amazing. Tori calls Jonathan Goliath. Hai calls Jonathan Thor, which I thought was pretty on point. Omar and Marianne both hate this. They're both super angry. And when they go back to camp, they call him out on it. I was worried about this because my boy Omar calls Jonathan Mr. Dummy. And I was just worried because, you know, I'm shipping these two. This is my survivor couple. I'm hoping for them to pull through. And so this was a tough one for me to watch.
I couldn't take seriously how mad they were because that underscoring music was so clownish.
You think it was just like filling time, Julia?
Maybe. I feel like that's like the music they play when like someone can't climb a ladder or like a coconut falls on them.
Right. Yeah, I guess they do just like anyone who's not Jonathan in that tribe is just like not getting taken seriously by the edit.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily true, but I think they're just trying to create like a small sort of conflict to just show like, see, it's not as harmonious of a family as you might think, according to Jonathan. Like, there are little cracks and they bicker.
I guess you have to show something, right? Like, they're clearly not going to go to another tribal council before the merge. So they just need to show this tribe doing something. And I guess this is the best footage that they had.
Unless they make Jonathan do a puzzle.
This specific challenge really illustrated to me that you just can't do the challenges with only one winner with Jonathan out there because it's just like, it's not a challenge. It's just like Jonathan's team will win. And so then they go back to their beach. They have these beautiful fish. Those fish looked so cool. Jonathan is literally ripping them in half. Jonathan gets his first confessional. Turns out his dad is a bit intense, was making his kids run up and down mountains on weekends. So what did we think about Jonathan's dad?
Okay, I know he told it in a way that's supposed to sound like really inspirational and potentially heartwarming, but to me it was like, why is this father like abusing lightly his children during the weekend?
That's what it sounded like to me too.
Was it like at 3 years old?
Like, no, I think it was, like, early teenager. He said, like, 14 or something.
I thought something, like, from the age of three, I was, like, doing pull-ups or something.
Right, yes. That was just, like, light training. Then they went hiking back up and down a mountain if he was, like, the last one to climb up or something.
I think I said running up and down a mountain, too. Oh, not even God. Hiking, like, sprinting.
Have any of you ever ran up a mountain before?
This week, no, but...
I once walked up a mountain and got heat stroke.
That makes sense. That's so much more relatable to me than being forced to run up a mountain every weekend. At this point, Jonathan's in his testimonial, he says he wants to do service for his tribe. Everything he does is to try and, you know, help the team. I felt like this was kind of what Julia was getting at, essentially, of like trying to, or maybe it was Elon, sorry, I can't recall whose theory was he has to make himself like less of a threat. This feels like what that is, I guess, for Jonathan.
I think he's hoping for this thing of like he'll be a shield, you know, and people will think that they should go far with him because he'll always be the target over them. But I think a potential flaw in the shield concept is that, let's say you're teamed up with Jonathan and you're like, oh, good, like they'll never vote for me. They'll vote for Jonathan before me. But then Jonathan wins immunity. And so then they'll be like, well, I guess we'll take out Lindsay, who's like Jonathan's number one. Or let's take out Omar, who, you know, so I feel like it's not as foolproof as maybe Jonathan is presenting it as. But obviously he has to grasp for whatever he can.
So then we move over to Ika Beach. Romeo is being bossed around by Roxroy, who he is being very fake nice to. Hated all of this stuff. Just like Roxroy is so bossy. It seems really unpleasant to live with him.
I do, however, love when they do this meta stuff when Romeo is narrating his own montage. I love whenever they get meta.
The editing is really good in that way where they'll like... There's another edit later that I'm definitely going to bring up that the last two seasons have implemented the self-awareness where into the edit in a really fun way where it's like people will say the thing that happened and then they'll show it. And it's I feel like the timing of it, like the comedic timing has really improved with the change of that edit. They go to Tori and Swathi. They're talking about plans. Swathi wants to vote out Drea because of her extra vote. Swathi says, let's bring in Roxroy. So Tori goes with, you know, the therapist leaps out. She's got the ego massage going on. Oh, what will we do without you, Roxroy? Then she calls him a narcissist and says that she can't escape from this narcissist. Roxroy immediately takes this info to Drea. So obviously Tori's not that good at working with Roxroy. Roxroy's like, what if there's an advantage somewhere that we don't know about? And Tori's like, ah, you don't know about Drea's advantage, immediately tells him. Roxroy immediately tells Treya. I have to say that I thought this was a good play by Tori in general that just, like, didn't work because she misread the person that she was dealing with.
I thought that the thinking behind Swati and Tori wanting to team up with Roxroy, vote out Drea, that made sense to me. However, I feel like since there's no love lost between Tori and Roxroy, but while Swati and Roxroy are close, I feel like Swati should have done a better job of, like, bringing the two of them together first and not just, like, let Tori go and do her own thing just one-on-one. Because clearly there's animosity there, there's no love lost, and if Swati feels strongly about working with the two of them, there should have been more of, like, a, hey, like, let's get to know each other better, let's all get on the same page. And yeah, that didn't really work because Rox didn't even believe, or even if he did, he was like, I don't care, I don't trust Tori, like, she needs to go.
I think that might be Swathi's, like, biggest mistake, right? Like, is that she misreads that play and that sets off a chain of events, because right after that happens, we go, I guess, yeah, we'll get to that after the immunity challenge. I got confused about where we are because they do sort of, they sow the seeds at this point. So we move to the immunity challenge next. Marianne says her beware advantage phrase. No one else follows up. Taku goes out to an immediate lead because, of course, they do. Jonathan is dragging the boat so fast you can see a wake behind the boat. At one point, he's literally dragging Marianne behind the boat. He's moving so fast. The main thing that I noticed in the first section of this was how bad Lydia is at jumping. This is where I become very self-conscious as I watch the show, because I really feel like I would be nervous to make that jump now that I've seen somebody look so uncoordinated when they do that jump.
At least for in Lydia's defense, she's been very good at the puzzles and she's helped her tribe win a lot. So fine, she wasn't able to do that jump, but you know, she still seems to be very valuable to the tribe in terms of overall challenge performance. So there's that.
I also wonder if she's a little shorter than some of the other people. It just felt like every time she was jumping, she was like nowhere near.
Nowhere close. Yeah.
So it makes me feel like A, she might be like, I think she's on the shorter side. And B, I feel like she wasn't utilizing like inertia enough. She was kind of like stopping right at the edge and then trying to jump, as opposed to like running and then leaping kind of while still running forward.
It was a bit toddler like if you watch kids jump where they like don't know to bend their knees, like it's just like a sort of thing.
I also did want to call out that before this challenge started, there was like one of these great poetic Jeff moments where he asks Marianne to describe the rain, which I thought was very romantic.
Oh, that is cute. My partner, Katie, also is watches with me, and her comment before this challenge was, are you guys talking about Jeff's mullet? Any takes on Jeff's new style in season 41 and 42? I love it personally, but I'm curious to hear what you guys think.
I mean, Jeff's a hunk. He's like, what, 60 plus at this point?
No, is he that old?
I think Jeff's like pretty old. I think he's like 60.
He must be, yeah. He's been doing this for 20 plus years. Gotta be.
I think he's my dad's age. I think it's like 58, but I'll double check that.
Anyways, I'm not going to ever comment on Jeff's style. I'm sure that it's finely curated, and I think it's working for him.
The mullet is back, you know?
Breaking news, he is 60 years old and looking as great as ever. I feel like he's just jumping on that train, you know, like you, Ben, with the longer hair during COVID. And, you know, he has the locks, so he's just leaning into it. I want to see it keep growing. Like, don't cut it. And season 50, like, is it like a ponytail or a braid? I don't know.
Maybe this is how he gets away with not getting evicted when he plays Survivor. His hair is so ridiculous that no one thinks he's a threat to win.
I like it.
Yes.
I feel like we'd be seeing like Jeff forming white boy dreads at some point if he was on the island now. I think that would be entertaining. I'm surprised to hear you say that Lydia seems good at the puzzle, Elon, because it seemed to me like every time I went over to Lydia, she was like staring helplessly at the puzzle. I didn't think she looked very good at the puzzle.
Well,
I made a note. It seems like they could have used Jenny in this challenge because they almost lost.
Well, I wondered for a moment if Vati was going to try to throw it to get rid of Daniel. I was glad that they didn't do that.
Yeah, I definitely would have enjoyed. Like, I would like to see that tribe go to one more tribal before the merge, just because I think it'll be interesting to see if Daniel can pull it off. But I was also happy how it turned out, because it was fun to see Tori again sort of mess things up. I liked how Dina said before about how, like, maybe Svati's biggest mistake was sending Tori to try to make the alliance. Or maybe it was just allowing Tori, because maybe it was Tori's decision to go do it. Like, thinking to herself, like, I could pull Roxroy in now. I'm sure I could make this happen. It's like, Tori is one of my favorite characters, just because I think she feels a lot more highly about herself than maybe she should. So she's, like, very confident she'll be able to pull something off that was actually going to be impossible because Roxroy hates her.
Yeah, I found so much of Tori's preseason stuff to be pretty cringe with the, you know, I can manipulate these people, and even the things like I'll bond with the nerds by mentioning Harry Potter, all of that stuff. So seeing her play from the bottom, coming from that point of view, is pretty fun.
Agreed.
And so Vati pulls it out, Ika going to tribal council. No Shipwheel Island this ep. Is that odd, or is that to be expected?
I think they choose, right? Either a reward challenge or a Shipwheel, and not both.
So
we needed the fish this right. time.
They should probably start doing Shipwheel every time, because Jonathan is just going to... Like, Jonathan's so good at these challenges, they actually probably have to, like, consider making some changes, right? To the tribes or something. Funny. I don't know.
I guess we'll have to see how it plays out. I think there's probably only like one episode or maybe two before the merge, right? They've already lost 5 people out of 18. Like, they've definitely had 12 and 13 person merges before. So probably just like one more immunity. Maybe we'll see Daniel go. Maybe we'll see Tori go. And then we'll be done with all this.
So they head back to Ika Beach. Roxroy says tribal will be easy. We can't trust Tori. She's got to go. Romeo and Tori are talking, and Romeo immediately calls her out. And Tori throws Swathi under the bus at this point. All of a sudden, everyone realizes Swathi is the genesis of all of these different plans that have been going around. This was my favorite moment of the episode. And it's Julia, you mentioned the great editing. This was my favorite edit, was the amazing montage of Swathi telling everyone they're her number one. That is such a tough edit for that poor girl. I would be cringing so hard watching myself.
It reminded me of, I feel like there was a similar thing in season 38 with Aubrey telling everyone some platitude like that.
I think it was Aubrey saying, I want to build a dialogue with you.
Oh, that's much more cringy.
Yeah, at least like saying you're my number one is like a common phrase as opposed to like a very specific thing. It's like almost as common as how we've been saying throw under the bus like 5,000 times in this episode.
Right. I think starting a dialogue too has like become has aged worse now that it's like a very corporate sounding way to be like, we're listening and starting a dialogue. Yeah. Swathi sees Drea and Tori are talking. And in fairness to Swathi, who like, you know, ends up getting voted out in this episode, she does pick up on the bad vibes, goes to Drea. She's like, I want to work with you. Drea's like got that fool me twice vibe on her face. Like, I doubt it, but okay. They head to tribal council. Jeff asks Drea what the vibe of the tribe is, which they eventually call the episode. And Drea goes silent for like 10 seconds. Like, there's a real long pause. And then says, we haven't come together yet. Everyone sort of agrees. And that's when the Swathi versus Tori subliminals start flying. Swathi's like, oh, somebody's been trying to screw up the tribe. And that's when Tori pulls out the therapy talk again, starts talking about how Swathi's projecting, not rooted in reality. You mentioned, Julia, that there's been gaslighting talk coming from Tori. This was where I really saw it. It was like professional level gaslighting, where it's like, I'm a therapist, so I know how to get in people's heads. It's tough for Swathi to come back from that with just the way that your actions are being judged and discussed. It's really hard to rebuff at that point.
Yeah, I think the issue also with Swathi is that she went on the defense like right away. And obviously the vote has probably been decided before tribal, but at the same time, it's like Swathi is not doing herself any favors or trying to gain any trust by kind of reiterating this like she said rhetoric of like, you know, oh, like Tori, we can't trust her and so on. While Tori is being as cool as a cucumber, honestly, just kind of sitting there smugly being like, that's just projecting and just so calm. And so even that type of demeanor, you kind of want to trust Tori more and Swati less, just kind of looking at both of them interact.
I feel like in a way, Swati missed a move in not trying to get Tori back, because both Tori and Swati say, like, oh, I legitimately wanted to work with this other person. Swati has Roxroy. If they could have just gotten Tori back and been like, we have a three-person majority, let's go back to the Drea plan, I feel like she could have been okay. No, you guys are shaking your heads.
Well, I think that was Swati's best move, but I don't think Rox was on board with that at all, unfortunately, because of how Tori approached their whole sort of meet and greet or whatnot. But also, before Tribal, I have to throw it to our boy Romeo, doing a fantastic job of really picking up on, you know, some clues and tying the different puzzle pieces together and being like, wait a minute.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that was well done.
I think that we definitely can give Romeo credit for putting the vote together, like making them switch to Swati instead of Tori. I guess the question becomes, was that like the right move? Definitely credit him for having the power in the tribe to control who the vote was going to go for. I think that Romeo's the one who convinced Drea, and then, you know, everything went from there. But yeah, I think our final discussion needs to be if the tribe made, and I guess when you say the tribe, I guess we're looking specifically at Romeo and Drea, because it seems like they were the decision makers here, and they chose to vote out Swati instead of Tori. I have my opinion, which is, I kind of feel like they made a mistake. I'm curious to know what you guys think.
I prefer Swati, so I feel like they made a mistake. But I agree that Romeo is, we didn't give him enough play. And so I just want, that's my main takeaway here, is that yes, he deserves a lot of credit in this episode. It's hard for me to comment, I think, further than just saying, like, I'm cheering for Swati, or I was cheering for Swati more than I was cheering for Tori, who bothers me.
I guess my issue is that, and kind of going back to what I said before, I feel like when you know that someone is not really loyal, but, like, you know them not to be so, like, you sort of have a good understanding of someone's actions, and, like, what you see is what you get. And that's sort of what we had here with Swati, that people, or sorry, that's what we had with Tori, where people are like, yeah, I don't really trust her, and I know she's sneaky, but I know exactly what she's trying to do. Whereas with Swati, everyone was like, oh, this like sweet, innocent young girl, and like, or young woman, and you know, we all thought that we were like her number one, and then you feel like so betrayed by this kid who just like told you lies, and it's just like hurts so much more, and you feel like you really can't trust her anymore, and like, what else is she going to tell you that, you know, you're gonna not know whether you can believe or not?
Yeah, I guess the way I see it is just more like Tori, it's like what Dina's saying, it's like Tori, like they knew they can't trust her, so it's like not surprising that she's like having a bunch of different plans. But I feel like that carries some weight, right? Like with Swati, yeah, maybe she was trying to overplay a little bit, she maybe got excited about the potential of like trying to blindside Drea, which obviously Drea is not going to be happy about. But I think if we think just like moving forward, I still think it would be easier for them to control Swati and kind of get her in line to stick together, as opposed to Tori, who I just feel like, you know, for sure is going to take every opportunity to do the most self-interested thing. So I guess we'll have to see how it plays out.
I also felt bad because maybe they just didn't show it, but it seemed like no one even did Swati the courtesy of like going to her and being like, hey, I heard something shady. Do you want to, you know, care to comment on this? Like, she sort of just had to suss out based on conversations she saw happening that she was even in trouble.
Yeah, I think that Tori has Chaos Cast vibes. And so, like, for sure, it's a thing of, like, once you hit the merge, she's probably a free agent. Whereas Swati seemed to, yeah, overplayed her hand and got... I think that a lot of this is timing, too. It's just, like, at the wrong time, everyone sort of realized that Swati had been playing them. And she went so hard, so fast with all of these people that they felt individually burned in a way. I think the other thing here is, like, the other takeaway about this vote is that very few people on the tribe actually have the ability to pull everyone in, and Romeo is one of them, Tori is not, Drea maybe, and Roxroy also not.
Yeah. Well, Drea tried to do this Women's Alliance, and that did not work. yeah, like at all.
That's a good point.
Which in retrospect, I mean, you know, in hindsight is 2020 and everything, but like looking back, don't you think that was just the best really move for all of those three people? Like mm-hmm. in the end, everything, they could have just come together, voted out Rocks, which two of them don't trust, so you know. And I guess maybe Swati was reluctant to do it exactly because she felt like she was close to Rocks. But at the end of the day, that would have been the best move for all of them.
Yeah, I definitely feel like I would have loved to see. I wonder if it happened and we just didn't see it. But again, it all comes back to like, Swathi had the idea that let's vote out Drea. She was like, we're going to have to be me, you, Tori, and then Roxroy. I want to see Swathi, you know, pitching this to Roxroy, because it's just like sending Tori, we already discussed it, like just sending Tori to do it was such a bad move. And I think we've all agreed that was kind of like where she lost the game, because then Roxroy went to tell Drea like right away, and then it all like blew up in the face, and then Romeo was able to turn things around. And it's just like, I just wonder if Swati could have just like done one little thing differently and things could have gone differently for her.
It sounded like from her exit press that she didn't send Tori, that Tori went on her own.
Right.
Was that?
I actually didn't listen to her press, and like I was sure that Tori is obviously a free agent and does what she wants, but I guess the premise of it all was like Rox and Tori do not get along. So I feel like if Swati has this idea of like the three of us should work together, then Swati needs to coordinate that somehow or like broker the deal.
Also, what do we think about Roxroy? Just totally, like, Tori gave him correct information. It was like, Drea has an extra vote. You didn't know this. And instead of him being like, oh, that's really useful that you're telling me something that my supposed ally didn't tell me, he's just like, I hate you, Tori. Like, I think Roxroy's, yeah, like, just so single-minded of just like, Tori's out next. He ended up voting for her, the only one who voted for her. It's just like, you can't change his mind, even if you give him a good reason to do so.
Yeah, I think that that was a good move by Tori. I thought, like, to go to him in general, that the move seemed sound. And then it was in that moment, I was like, well, Roxroy is not a Survivor winner, because a Survivor winner doesn't immediately take good info and just tell the person who it incriminates because he likes them more with no amount of critical thought that maybe like there's a reason why that you haven't been looped in on this and what that could mean for your game. Just immediately goes to Drea with it. I thought that was a real chump move by Roxroy. I did think that probably the reason why Swathi didn't go and why Tori did is because Tori has like massive, I mean, Tori's got the like narcissist vibe as well of just like, I am the person who gets it and knows what's happening. All of these other people are clueless. And Swathi's 20 and afraid, like probably intimidated to go and make a move. So Tori would just naturally, just by dynamic, just be like, I'll go do it.
I know I've heard some speculation about Tori being one of these final three goats. Do we feel like Roxroy has final three goat potential?
Oh my God, no. He's too, I'm sorry, but I think he's too frustrating on the island to survive that long. He like has Abby Maria vibes. Like maybe like he'll survive a while because he's just such an obvious non-threat, but people will get real frustrated with him, especially on that bigger tribe when they merge. Oh, I can't wait for people getting annoyed at Roxroy and wanting to vote him out.
That's actually really funny, and I am excited for that now that you point that out. I was hoping he went out sooner, but now I do want to see him post-merge.
I thought it was pretty funny watching him sit out of the challenge and try to boss people around from the sidelines, yeah, but they would not listen.
Oh my God, yes. That was so funny and so infuriating.
So at this point, so you're saying Roxroy, I think we all agree, has no chance to win. I think overall, though, on the season, like most of the people you can't say that about. Like I think like there's a lot of people. I think it's rare to be this far in. And like I still feel like most of the people have a chance to win in my mind. Like I'm thinking Roxroy, like we discussed Jonathan. I think like it's really going to be difficult for him to win. And then maybe Tori, just for the same reason. But like, is there anyone else on our radar that like can't win? I feel like aside from those three, I feel like everyone has a chance.
Daniel is not looking
well. Yeah,
great.
Daniel would have to definitely dig himself out of a bit of a hole. Mm-hmm. He needs to somehow make it to the merge and sort of regroup.
Yeah, that's step number one.
I do feel like Marianne probably is unlikely to,
oh, yeah,
to just like keep it together, just like just because they don't seem to be such a like strategic mindset. It's just like first thought, is going to be yelled out, and I just it seems like it would need to be a lot of things going right for Marianne to make it deep.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, another thing I'm thinking about now, just imagining the merge, is like I'm realizing how much personality there is in all these players. Like everyone has like so much kind of like just sass and opinions and just different types of, I don't know, approaches to like life and like the game. I'm very excited to see how they all clash together. I think it might be like pretty chaotic.
We haven't lost any big personalities yet either. Like, it feels like pretty much everyone who's gone, it hasn't really impacted, like, the show, like, the show dynamic.
Yeah, definitely. I guess maybe that's, like, a bit of, like, chicken and the egg. It's probably, like, they know not to give a big edit to people who aren't going to make it far. But, yeah, we've definitely got all of our big names. I guess, actually, one pairing that I'd be interested to see them interact together is Romeo and Hai. Because they both seem to be, like, the smart... They even kind of look similar in terms of their, like, shape of their bodies. They're, I guess, like, Hai... Or no, Romeo had a skinny guy alliance with Zach. And that's why I feel like Hai could just come in and, like, join him on that. And they both seem to have, like, this, like, analytical way of thinking and, like, just, like, sort of having this overall idea of, like, what's going on in the tribe. And so it would be fun to see if those two will work together or if they'll, like, clash since they both are, like, kind of fighting for the same role.
Yeah, almost feel like they might realize the other person is as much of a threat because they're both like really see what's going on and are really strategic. So I think they will like appreciate that in each other, but I think it would also make it hard for them to probably team up because they'll be like, oh, that guy's too smart. I need to get rid of him.
Yeah, I can see that.
I'm so excited to see how it plays out.
So then we get to the vote. Swathi plays her shot in the dark and says, it's not that I don't trust my allies. I just don't trust Tori. Baby girl. Oh, what a rough line to go out. Your dying words are, it's fine, but I felt bad for Swathi in that moment.
Me too. And, you know, she just wanted to play a big game. Like everyone on this season, honestly. I feel like this new era, everyone is playing big and hard and moves all the time and double crossing. And I just wonder if there's, you know, just something to sitting back and just trying to kind of lay low, which no one is really trying to do in this game, which I find like kind of surprising.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I almost feel like maybe her move was like, you know, Drea's coming, like, let's make a girls alliance, like, and the different people are coming to spot. Like, I feel like she just kind of could have sat on it and not tried to, like, push things forward until, like, they actually lost a challenge and then kind of, like, get the vibe and then kind of use all of her information. But you're right that I just don't know if people have it in them to just not play, like, as soon as they have the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, I think that looking at this season and being aware of it being shot like, what is it, mid or early 2021, all of these people would have been coming. Like, remember where we were in late 2020, like early 2021, like the vaccine just starting to come out, probably have just been like in quarantine for a year and just like waiting for this to happen. And then once they find out they're going, just focusing on it for like weeks and months, like maybe they're working from home or they've lost their jobs during the pandemic. Like, I just can't imagine the amount of focus that would go into this task. And then, yeah, then you have 2 weeks when you arrive in quarantine on the island to just sit and think about what you're going to do when you're out there. And so then they hit the beach and it's like, yeah, no, I have no excuses. I'm going hard. And it does seem like we're seeing that.
Yeah, I 100% agree, Ben. That's a really good observation. I was trying to think, like, what makes this new era, like, so trigger-happy for everyone. And, yeah, I think the pandemic is exactly what it is. They just, like, have no chill. They don't want to sit around. They've been sitting around for 2 years. Like, they're done with that. They're here. They're going to make moves. They're going to play hard.
That makes sense to me. And that is, I guess, are we out of takes for episode 4?
Just looking at the vote, does everyone understand when Romeo goes to Drea, like, did you use your extra vote? Why she would have?
Yeah, I don't really get that either. Like, it seemed like it was just everyone voting for Swathi. So I guess, like, maybe they realized that, because Roxroy did his whole speech, right, about how, like, Svati's so impressive as, like, a young person. So maybe they were like, okay, now we know that Roxroy is not going to vote for her, which turned out to be the case. But even still, they still had 3 votes available, unless they were worried that someone's lost their vote, or maybe worried that, like, Roxroy also has an extra vote. Like, maybe it was just to be, like, an extra insurance. But also, why would they care, right? Because even in the worst case that finds a Tory goes instead, it's not even the worst situation in the world.
Right, that would be their second choice anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if that was coordinated in a way of just, like, in case this shot in the dark works. I did see a tweet. I can't remember. I think it was from Evie from season 41, but it may have been Erica, about how trigger happy this season has been on the shot in the dark. And yeah, I mean, what have we seen? 3 already?
Do y'all think we're going to see one work? I mean, statistically, if it's used 3 more times, we should, right?
Yeah. It would be exciting.
And that's the first time or two it's been used, in my mind, I've just been like, waste of time. Like, it's not going to work this time. But now that I've seen it enough, I'm starting to be like, it does feel like it will work at some point. And I do hope that it's the sort of thing where, like, it flips the game a little bit.
That would be exciting. But
yeah.
And actually, I had a final question. Like, do we know for sure that Rox knew about the plan? He was just, like, so single-mindedly voting for Tory that there was no convincing him to not. So they were like, oh, whatever, we have the votes, just do what you want. Or there's no chance they, like, blindsided him, right? Because he did kind of say wow at the end, like, be like, wow. But I wonder if it was just like, wow, that was intense, or like, wow, I did not see that coming.
I really don't know. It seems unclear. He obviously wasn't enough a part of the plan that they needed to show him getting looped into the planning. But yeah, I guess we'll find out in the first scene next week, I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, if we were to, like, give Roxroy credit for being, like, a super strategic player, then you can say, like, he was defending against the shot in the dark. So, like, if the shot in the dark did hit, then Tory would have the most votes with his one vote. But it's also kind of hard to imagine that he was thinking that way. So, I don't know. But
that'd be so fun.
Yeah, that would be
fun. If it just turns out that he's just like, I'm going to get... If that had worked, I would have been so happy.
But yeah, I think instead it was probably my guess. I think the simplest explanation is just that he was looped in on the plan. He was like, I don't agree with it. I'm still voting Tory. And then the other 3 were just like, all right, fine. Like, it doesn't really matter what you do. And then that was probably that, because he's a stubborn guy.
Yeah, I feel like it happens all the time on Big Brother, the sympathy vote. But you don't see it as much on Survivor.
Mm-hmm. True. I guess on Big Brother, there's only, like, 2 people who can go out. So, like, you make a sympathy vote, and it's like, you're still not in danger if somehow it doesn't go your way. In Survivor, it's like, if you make a vote that turns out to, make the plan not go as planned, like, you could potentially be the casualty. So maybe that's why you're not going to want to go away from the plan that the tribe has. Like, Tyson famously voted for the wrong person in Heroes vs. Villains, then he got himself voted out.
RIP. Tyson. All right. That was another fun episode of the Survivor Squad. We'll be back same time, same place next week. Already looking forward to it.
Me too.
Bye.
Same
please. Thanks for joining the squad, Julia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seamless addition.